This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening and joining us to talk about history's main event in 2016. A woman like no other in American politics.
Tonight, we've reached a milestone in our nation's march toward a more perfect union. The first time that a major party has nominated a woman for president.
That woman, Hillary Clinton, takes on a man like no other in American political history, Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton had a monumental task last night to an American public who think they know everything there is to know about her long career.
The truth is, through all these years of public service, the service part has always come easier to me than the public part. I get it that some people just don't know what to make of me. So, let me tell you.
So, she understood she needed a reintroduction, but there is no way she could just show up as some new Hillary at this, her fourth national convention. Her message last night had to be consistent with things she's said for the past 40 years, but fresher somehow. And she needed to take on Donald Trump without shouting, without being dismissive, without appearing arrogant to Trump's supporters. There were some subtle and impressive uses of language last night to try and meet that challenge. Kathleen Hall Jamieson, director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the Annenberg School of Communications at the University of Pennsylvania, has been watching Hillary Clinton's speeches and her use of language closely over the years. She joins me now. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Kathleen.
Good to be with you.
Just impressions off the top of your head before we begin.
The narrative matters. The stories that Chelsea told and Bill Clinton told are trying to put in place history about Hillary that is largely unknown, including that she grew up in the middle class, she's an advocate for children, she defends first responders, and she was there when that Bin Laden decision was made, and she urged it.
So new narratives, that was one of the challenges, and she certainly did that, and the whole evening last night did that. But listen to Hillary Clinton talking about fear. She spoke about it in 1969, and she spoke about it last night when she referred to the fear that was talked about so much at the Republican National Convention. First, 1969.
One of the most tragic things that happened yesterday, a beautiful day, was that I was talking to a woman who said she wouldn't want to be me for anything in the world. She wouldn't want to live today and look ahead to what it is she sees because she's afraid. Fear is always with us, but we just don't have time for it. Not now.
He wants us to fear the future and fear each other. Well, you know, a great Democratic president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, came up with the perfect rebuke to Trump more than 80 years ago during a much more perilous time. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
From we don't have time for fear to fear itself is what we should get rid of.
And Donald Trump is something that we ought to fear, someone we ought to fear. One memorable line from that speech is a person you can't trust, you know, because he's going to be baited by a tweet, can't be trusted with nuclear weapons.
So let's talk about her evolution as a feminist and the way she addressed feminism throughout her career and the way she addressed the historic moment of her ascension to the nomination of the Democratic Party last night. First from 1987 and then from last night.
The two main obstacles to overcoming the problem of battered women and children are men's attitudes and women's attitudes. And they have to some extent been enshrined in our institutions. And what I mean by that is that men's attitudes still, as you can see by looking around this crowd to see so few of them, do not take seriously in their personal lives or their public lives the problem of domestic violence.
After all, when there are no ceilings, the sky's the limit. So let's keep going. Let's keep going until every one of the 161 million women and girls across America has the opportunity she deserves to have.
In the first case, it seems, Kathleen, she's scolding almost. In the second case, she's saying, we're already there.
And she also is now speaking in a voice that is far more inclusive. So it is a voice that embodies boys as well as girls. It's a voice that embodies men as well as women. And in the process of telling the narrative of her life, it features her father as a person who was in the military, albeit briefly, as well as her mother. But the strong narrative is mother to daughter, daughter to Chelsea, Chelsea to granddaughter. It's a legacy argument about future generations in general, but in particular girls.
four clips now. We're going to see her evolution over this very long career that she talked about. We'll begin with her speaking at her high school in 1992 while campaigning for her husband, Bill Clinton. Then we'll hear her at the very famous 1995 Fourth Women's Conference in Beijing, China. Then we'll hear her at the 1996 Democratic National Convention. And then finally, last night. Listen.
I know I should answer the question that is on very many of your minds, and that is, how did a nice Republican girl from Park Ridge go wrong? I mean, this is one of the great unanswered questions that we have to address. I was a Goldwater girl. I mean, really, we used to wear, you know, little banners which said Goldwater girl.
If there is one message that echoes forth from this conference, let it be that human rights are women's rights and women's rights are human rights once and for all.
To raise a happy, healthy, and hopeful child, it takes a family. It takes teachers. It takes community leaders. It takes those who protect our health and safety. It takes all of us. Yes, it takes a village. And it takes a president.
And most of all, don't believe anyone who says, I alone can fix it. 20 years ago, I wrote a book called It Takes a Village. None of us can raise a family, build a business, heal a community, or lift a country totally alone.
The evolution there is amazing. What's your impression of the It Takes a Village versus We Can't Do It Alone, the thoughts she had last night?
It's not only we can't do it alone, it's a direct contrast to Donald Trump's assertion that he can do things alone and that he's uniquely qualified in some ways to act alone. The rest of that passage by Hillary Clinton invokes all sorts of images from our culture, teachers and firefighters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The inclusivity of it is marked. And when you step back and you say, what are you showing across those passages? You're showing two things. You're showing first a clear articulation of principle. Women's rights are human rights. Human rights are women's rights. But also an early argument toward the need for the collective whole of the community to act responsibly for each other.
We're going to play some very famous moments from Hillary's career. And it harkens back a little bit to that 1992 clip, which you heard, and I'm sure you recognize this sort of folksy way she's talking, like a lady who lunches a little bit. I was a Goldwater girl, she says, trying to relate to other women out there in America at a time of campaigning for Bill Clinton. It seems to me Hillary has always had a certain kind of identity crisis about how she should be in this particular kind of moment. And these two moments from very, very famous periods during the Bill Clinton time reflect that. And I wonder if you think there's been a real change from moments like these. Here, this first one you'll remember.
You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette.
Where does that come from? What was the context there, Kathleen?
That's a 60 Minutes interview. They're arguing publicly that their marriage is strong. She's going to stand with Bill Clinton in the face of charges of marital infidelity.
And then here's something from 1992 that I know you'll recognize.
I suppose I could have stayed home and baked cookies and had teas, but what I decided to do was to fulfill my profession, which I entered before my husband was in public life.
Now, she got in trouble for disparaging the standing by my man or, baking cookies. What's happened since?
Well, first, that second soundbite was grossly and egregiously taken out of context without correction by the media. The end part that you played wasn't routinely played in 1992. She is not asserting, as the Republicans asserted that she was saying, that she didn't want to be a mother and she didn't want to take care of Chelsea. She's talking about a time before they had Chelsea, and she's arguing that it didn't make any sense for her, a lawyer with a law degree coming to Arkansas to act as a hostess for a governor, instead that she should pursue her own interests on behalf of many causes, including children.
So, Kathleen Hall Jamison, do you think this plants a flag and stakes out a frame for Hillary Clinton to embody between now and November? Or do we devolve into a kind of negative campaigning with a lot of ads and nastiness that's really going to remind us of the primary campaign?
The convention was trying to argue for inclusivity. Stronger together is a very strong theme. They're trying to suggest that the country can reconcile differences. The question is, will the campaign actually accomplish that?
Now, she says you can't do it alone, which means that she's going to be relying on the other big guns of the Democratic Party. Will they help or ultimately hurt her between now and November?
The challenge is being both a legatee of the Obama presidency and also the agent of change. She needs to establish not simply that she is backed by those major folks who will remind people of the status quo, but remind us of all those speeches in the convention of ordinary folks whose lives she's touched, to generalize the broader message, which is she has a map to make the country greater, as opposed to Donald Trump, who wants to make it great again. He's looking back, she's looking forward in this vision of America.
And we're all looking forward to November with those great thoughts. Kathleen Hall Jamison, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
She's director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the Annenberg School for Communications at the University of Pennsylvania.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.